What's so great about?
What's so great about the podcast that is all alone this week? My name is Terry, and like I just said, I'm on my own this week because poor old Andy has a bad case of COVID-19 or whatever it is called these days. So he's recuperating, so I figured I'd take the chance while the mods are asleep to jump on and talk about some stuff I've been watching. The format of the show is I'm going to go through five films that are available to stream readily, depending on what subscription service you have, that I thought were really good that I've watched this year. Some of them relate to last year. A couple of the ones that I didn't get around to getting on my top 10. And there's a couple from this year that have really impressed me. And, this format, I get to get into it with a little more detail rather than Andy falling asleep as I chat away to him. I've got stuff from Netflix, got something from Disney Plus, something from Now TV, my boys, and something from Prime Video. I do not have anything from Apple TV Plus because I was looking at their film slate and it is surprisingly bare. Best film I've seen done by them was Killers of the Flower Moon. And then I was looking at this year, okay, they've got Wolves coming out this month, which I'm kind of excited to see. But they had that movie last month with Matt Damon and Casey Affleck called The Instigators, directed by Doug Liman, who I am a big fan of, and it was just just flat. So nothing from them, but I will, you know what, I talked about it before, I'll give them their props. Their TV department is really still killing it. I've stumbled across a new show from theirs. It's called Bad Monkey, and it's starring Vince Vaughn, and it is pure catnip to me. It's based on a bunch of novels by a guy, Michael Highsmith, who is basically, he's like a Florida crime writer, so all his stuff is set in the Florida Keys, which, you know, is the scuzziest of places in fiction. All the best, right from there, M.L. Leonard and many others. But this is basically, Vince Vaughn is a detective who's been suspended for ramming his girlfriend's husband's golf cart into the bay. I think I'm getting that right. And he basically, in order to get back on the force, he has to deliver a severed arm that is fished out of the bay by like a rich person on a charter boat, and his boss wants him to deliver that to get back on the force. And then all sorts of crime hijinks starts to unfold from there. I'm two episodes in. I'm really digging it. Vince Vaughn is as charming as ever. His hairline, however, I don't know what's going on with it. It's ever receding, but also getting higher. So you get like a lot of forehead real estate, but also the hair itself is like 4 inches off his head. But it's good. You know what? Like, it's been too long since he has been really good. You know, you think of his mid-2000s run, where literally everything he touched was like out of the park. And then, like, the late noughties, early teens, I guess. Am I saying that right? God, he had like 5 in a row that just, he as a leading man, that just sank like a stone. So now he's doing TV. But he's good, you know. I don't know. Somebody, stick him in a Paul Thomas Anderson movie or something like that. Let him shine. I don't know. Put him with somebody who really knows how to work him. It's a great cast as well. You have Michelle Monaghan in there. John Ortiz, for those who know, he's class. He's a Michael Mann guy. And yeah, I am digging it, I have to say. And I've also been watching on Amazon. It had been on my list forever, and I kind of ran out of stuff to watch. I was up to date with Slow Horses, and I've kind of been dipping back into Homicide: Life on the Street. But I'm finding it hard to watch because the copies I can find are only from the mid-90s. They've remastered them, but I can't get them anywhere because we don't get Peacock over here That's a whole, you don't want to hear me talk about that. But I came across Mr. and Mrs. Smith on Prime Video, which stars Donald Glover and Maya Erskine. It's a slight twist on the movie, you know, the Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie movie, in that, yes, they're both spies, but the way it works is they sign up to this place called The Company, and then you get put together with a new life, and you get put with your new partner, your new, you know, you're legally married, and they forge all the documents and all that, and then it's kind of like you get tasks, and you have to intercept the package, or track somebody, bug them, inject the truth serum into them, all this stuff, and it's kind of like, can they work as a team, will they get romantic, and it certainly helps when you have two very funny people, like Maya Erskine. You might know her from, there's a show, Pen 15, on, I don't know what US thing, I, you know, I get, my boys at Now TV hooked me up, which is very funny. She plays like a 13-year-old version of herself, even though she's like in her 30s, and all the kids are teenagers. It's, the juxtaposition of it is very good, because she's there with, you know, braces on and all, you know, you tell she's a grown woman, but she's so good at acting as a teenager. So to have her in this and kind of play off Donald Glover's, you know, charm, and he's a bit silly, she's a bit silly, but they're also like two, you know, objectively attractive people. It's just, it just fucking works. And the director has done a lot of Atlanta episodes, which if you guys haven't got around to seeing, I'd highly recommend. One of the best shows of the past couple of years, and they're all on Disney Plus. What a world we live in, that it's just all there at the click of a button or whatever. If you have one of those remotes you talk into, I don't do that, but you know, if you do it, that's fine, more power to you. I'm happy for you, to be honest. Happy that you're watching things. Everybody should be watching stuff. That makes me sound a bit weird. Anyway, I'm going to get into my top, my not top five, but my five that I'm watching here, and I'm going to kick it off with a movie that came out just a couple of weeks ago, and it's one I've recommended to Andy. I know he hasn't watched it. I mean, he's talking about watching The Equalizer, and, you know, good for him. I'm glad he pulled the trigger on that. This is a better movie than The Equalizer. I told him that. I told him to watch it. Radio silence since, you know. But this movie is called Rebel Ridge.
The acronym you need to worry about right now is PACE. P-A-C-E. Ever heard of it? It's a planning methodology used for comm systems, but they found it could be applied anywhere. Nursing, engineering, parachute infiltrations, posting bail. So the P is for primary. That's me, riding into town with my bag of money. A is for alternate. That's a deal we apparently never made. C is my contingency. That's the restaurant owner you put out of business this morning. And there it is. Spot on too, like you just ate shit. Anyway, you got me burning through all these letters. And after this conversation, we already on E. You know what that stands for?
Marine Corps Martial Arts Program.
What?
MCMAP. Combat system combines hand-to-hand, close quarters. Oh. I think he's on the Wikipedia page. Teaching jujitsu to the 6th Marine Regiment.
Okay.
It's team building. One mine, any weapon.
Calling any units on patrol.
Yep.
Here come your peeps.
Chief!
You want to honor that deal, or do I got to transition to
him? Put some distance between you.
Let's not do that.
That clip you just heard there is from a pivotal moment in 2024's Rebel Ridge, directed by Jeremy Saulnier and starring Aaron Pierce and Don Johnson, plus many more. I unabashedly love this movie. It's a Netflix movie. If you haven't seen it on your dashboard or whatever they call it, they're not doing their job properly. I remember seeing the trailer and thinking, holy fuck, this is exactly my jam. It is basically a guy comes into a small town, is met with a bunch of prejudice, and he has to not go postal on or anything like that, but he has to take down the corrupt police force. There's loads more to it in that basically the movie is about civil asset forfeiture, which is something I had heard about in TV shows years ago. It's a real thing that they do in the States where they can seize any property, whether it's money, actual property like a house or a car or anything like that, if they think that it has been involved in a crime. So, which is insane because they've no proof, but I think it was designed for, say, drug dealers who are living in a massive villa, but they've no, record of income, and it kind of just trickled its way down to, affect the everyday Joe. Essentially, the film starts with Aaron Pierre's character's Terry Richmond, who's cycling through, I can't even remember, it's like Sandy Shades or something like that, some small town. I think it's in Louisiana, they mention. And he is on his bike listening to Iron Maiden. And you just see like a police car kind of following, just kind of appears in scene following them and rams into the back of his bike, flips him over and says he was chasing him for 2 miles and he was resisting arrest, or he was fleeing. So he arrests him or detains him, he doesn't arrest him, detains him, goes through his backpack and finds that he has $37,000 in cash that he is going to take. And the reason why Terry has that is his cousin is in prison in the town and he needs to post bail. And it doesn't really tell you why, but there's reasons for it. And essentially it gets into a whole thing of like, I want my money back because I need to get my cousin out of jail. And they keep fucking with him and pushing him and pushing him. And he kind of is that's all he can stand. He can't stand no more, essentially. And this guy, Aaron Pierre, is a fucking star in the making. I'd only seen him in M. Night Shyamalan's Old, the movie about the beach that makes you old. He played a gangster rapper, Mid-Size Sedan, which is a fantastic name. But in this, you're like, oh my god, this, he is, not to give away the ending, but like, I want like 5 more Terry Richmond movies, you know what I mean? He kind of seems like the kind of guy that like Tom Cruise, if he was making Top Gun Maverick now, he'd rope him in to kind of be the next one ready to explode, because he's very charismatic. He's no nonsense. His whole thing is he's a Marine that he don't think he ever served overseas, but he's big in like training combat, I think is his thing. So you see him do some really good like jiu-jitsu stuff in it, and it's like, it's not clean, it's really messy, which makes it more realistic and more satisfying in my opinion. You have Don Johnson as the local chief of police, who is, he's racist, but he is not like overtly racist. He doesn't call him the n-word or a Jimmy or anything like that, but he does everything but. And it's 2 hours 10 minutes or something. That'll be my only complaint about it, that like you need to shade off maybe 20 minutes in the middle. But James Cromwell pops up as a possibly crooked judge in it. There's some really good stuff here, and like the action is tight, it's very charismatic. I was engaged the whole time, and it's clever, it reminds you of First Blood, which was also clever. But the multiple copies that come from that, this is like the new blueprint for going forward. I'm sure you will see more and more movies trying to be like this, the same way it was in the late 70s early 80s with Rambo, One Man on the Mission and all that. But like, this has such nuance, it like I say, so clever about how it goes about. I can't recommend it highly enough, and it's just sitting there. We all have Netflix, right? It's just sitting there. The director is somebody who I've been a fan of for a while. Did a great movie which also was on Netflix, I don't know if it still is there, called Green Room, which is fucking brilliant. Here's the pitch of it. A punk rock band go and play a white supremacist gig and they witness a murder, and they're stuck in the green room trying to figure out how they get out without being murdered themselves. Perfect. It is fantastic. Patrick Stewart, he of Captain Picard fame, plays the leader of the White Supremacists, which is fucking also deadly. If it's not there, look it up. It's really, really good. And he has another one on Netflix called Hold the Dark, which it's a tougher watch, but Jesus Christ, does he direct the shit out of it. It's about, I can't even remember really what it's about. Jeffrey Wright goes to Alaska to maybe locate a missing person who, you know, may or may not have sacrificed himself to a wolf god. I'm not, you know, but there's also like crime procedural elements of it in there, and there's some fucking amazing shootouts. This guy is one of my faves. He's only done like 5 movies, but watch Rebel Ridge. Okay, why don't we jump over to Now TV, my boys. And I want to talk about a movie that is just sitting there. It's designated as a Sky original. It's by my man, Michael Mann. This is 2023's Ferrari.
Who gives a shit? You were supposed to save him.
You blame me for his death?
Yes. Yes, because you promised me he wouldn't die.
Everything. I did everything. Table showing what calories he could eat. What went in, what came out. I graphed the degrees of albuminuria, the degrees of esotemia. Diuresis. I know more about nephritis and dystrophy than cars.
I blame you. Could you let him die?
The father deluded himself. The great engineer. I will restore my son to health. Swiss doctors, Italian doctors, bullshit. I could not. I did not.
Because you were so consoled at Castelvetro, you lost your attention. You had another boy growing stronger while Dino was getting weaker.
What goes on in your mind? He got sick. Dystrophy. Kidneys. It destroyed him. It destroyed us.
What do you care? Huh? You have another son. You have another wife.
She's not my wife. But he is my son.
That was Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz as Enzo and Laura Ferrari, respectively. They're just laying into each other over the death of their son. This movie is not your typical biopic. It focuses on the later stages of Enzo Ferrari's life. Apparently, he was quite the difficult person, shall we say. It's by Michael Mann, who I think is one of our greatest living filmmakers. He hasn't made a film, I think it was 7 years or 8 years before this, Blackhead, which is an underrated movie, but you know, we'll get to Michael Mann someday on the Patreon. I got him on a few lists coming up, don't worry. So I was very excited to see this last year. I wanted to try and get to the cinema to see it. I think it came out in Jan or Feb here. It was released around Christmas in the States. I'd heard the reviews were good, but not great. So when I finally got around to watching it a little while ago, I have to tell you, I fucking loved it. I know some people are like, oh, it's a bit too long. It's 2 hours. It focuses on Ferrari, basically his company as a manufacturer of cars, kind of losing a lot of money in business, and they're not the number one racers anymore, like Maserati. There's a scene at the start where they break the record for, you know, the lap speed record, whatever, and it's so interesting to see it done. It's just a bunch of people watching a practice lap and they time it, and it's like, yep, they've done it, okay, that's the new record. And then immediately after that, Ferrari tries to get one of his drivers to, you know, get the record back, and they have a fuck. The crashes in this movie are so upsetting, in that, you know, they're in a car with no lid on the car, there's no roof, they're in a race car, and when they're trying to get the record back, I don't know whether it's the car that's faulty or the driver's just not up to it, but like, there's a crash where he goes off the side of the track. The car goes one side, and there's just like this, I think I might have said it on the podcast before, but it's just like a speck, it looks like, or a little tiny figure or something that flies out of the car, and it's like, oh, that's the driver. And it's just, there's no sound that, you know, he's hit a tree, or that they don't do a close-up or anything. It was like all the more unsettling to be like, oh, there's the body like flying silently through the air. So that kind of inspires him to maybe, they basically it shows how walled off he is, first of all, that it's like that doesn't really affect them. It's on to the next thing. What can we do to get the company, either somebody to buy in with them, or to, you know, kind of get back to be number one in Italy? So they have to win this race, the Mille Miglia. So that's big thrust of it, is there's going to be this really long race through all the Italian countryside, which is crazy in retrospect that this actually happened. I didn't know a lot about this stuff. If some of you are big into cars or racing, you might already have heard of this, but like in the movie, there is, yeah, they're doing this race, and it's very interesting that, you know, he is the manager of the team, and you see him, there's four drivers doing the race, and you see him talk to each driver, telling them they can win it, but he tells them how to do it with like a different tactic each one. It's very interesting, especially as somebody who has managed football teams in the past, and how you would have to talk to certain players differently. That was very good. But in the race, when it looks like they're going to win, and this driver that we've been following for the whole time, there's a horrific accident that, you, in my head, I'm like, oh, he's doing this for a reason, because it's focusing on the race for the whole time, maybe jumping back to Ferrari every now and again. And then it just cuts to this family in, like, you know, a kind of country house, like a small enough house. And they hear the cars are coming, and the son wants to go out and see them and stuff like that. And you're like, oh, Jesus, but, like, these fucking cars are flying by, and all these pedestrians are just standing there, which by today I'm like, this is so fucking dangerous. And sure enough, when our guy comes by, he hits something in the road, maybe a cat eye or something, and the crash they show of his car flipping over, and it goes through, like, ugh. Anyway, it is horrific. I had my hand on my head for like 5 minutes afterwards, like, involuntarily. I was not expecting it, again, because I didn't know any of this stuff, but I thought I was gripped for a lot of this movie. The other thrust of it is that he has a dead son that he's talking about in that clip I played you there, and that he actually, you know, he has another woman on the side who, with, he has had a son, and his wife, Penelope Cruz, Laura, does not know about it. And she is phenomenal in this movie. Adam Driver is also very good. That scene where they're screaming at each other, I could watch them do that for 2 hours. It's fucking amazing. I think if you're a fan of Mann, if you've liked Heat, Collateral, even his kind of less action-y ones, like, you know, The Insider, you'll really, really dig this. I mean, if you've... Some people talk about him being like a vibes director. This is less vibes and more character study, but I fucking loved it. You know, I think I gave it 4.5 on Letterboxd. The more I think about it, should have been a 5. This is the margins we're dealing with here, folks. Now, up next, we will have a look on Prime Video, and this is The Iron Claw.
You okay, Dad?
Lee, I'm sorry. Sorry, boys. You shouldn't see me like this. Man doesn't cry. I'm sorry, boys.
It's okay, Dad. You can cry. Everyone cries.
Yeah, what are you talking about? You cry all the time.
Do you think you know why you're sad?
Well, I guess it's because I used to be a brother, and now I'm not a brother anymore.
Oh, well, we'll be your brothers, Dad.
Yeah, Dad, we'll be your brothers.
Thank you, boys. Thank you. Thank you, boys.
The sound you just heard there, apart from my heart shattering into a bunch of little pieces, was Zac Efron in 2023's The Iron Claw. It's the story of the famous Von Erich family that wrestled in the 70s and 80s in the NWA, as Zac Efron plays Kevin Von Erich, and he is joined in the movie by Jeremy Allen White as Kerry Von Erich, Harris Dickinson as David Von Erich, and Holt McCallany as Fritz Von Erich, the patriarch of the family. This movie is a tough watch. It's an excellently acted movie. The wrestling is quite well done with it, I have to say. There's a few bits that really... they didn't take away from it, but like some of the casting, like they have somebody who is playing Ric Flair, and he is, in my opinion, not a fit. Now, if I was doing dream casting, I'd get my man Gosling in there. But for anybody who is not familiar with the story, it's basically Fritz Von Erich was a wrestler in the NWA in the 50s. It was his family legacy, and he pushed his boys to compete. And, you know, one of the lines in it is like, I have a different favorite son on a different day of the week. There's like rankings for them to go up and down. He pushes them quite a lot, and so much so that basically the family has one tragedy after another. It is a heartbreaking, like, true life story, to be honest. Like, and they don't even put in everything that happened into the movie, because there's another son in it who doesn't even make the movie, who passed away. Watch the movie for yourself if you want to be spoiled or whatever. I will say there's a few deaths in it, and that clip might have alluded to the tragedy. I will say Zac Efron is phenomenal in this. I didn't think he had it in him. He is huge. He's like a hulking, you know, not a giant, but like he's like almost a man-child at times, but he can, you know, smash your head in. He is an excellent wrestler in it, but he's not such a great talker, whereas his two younger brothers, they kind of are more the complete package, and he sometimes gets overshadowed by them. And it's just a very sad movie, but it's like, it's one that afterwards, it makes you feel something, you know what I mean? And for a sports biopic or sports movies, it's wrestling is a fucked up thing that I love so much. And to see it depicted on screen very accurately, and like how much the sport takes out of you, I thought was great. The same for The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke. It's something that you give everything to and you get very little in return. The performances all around are great. The female performances as well are brilliant. Maura Tierney plays the mother of the family, and Lily James plays Kevin's wife, who I just think is always kind of a ray of sunshine. She is so lovely. It'll make you laugh at times, but really will make you almost cry. By the end of it, I was choked up. And I just think for a sport that doesn't get enough movies made about it, or if they do, they do it wrong a lot of the time, it's really nice to see it done right. The director, Sean Durkin, has also done a great movie called Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene. If you've seen that movie, you know what he's capable of in terms of unsettling it. And there's a few bits in this where it's just somebody on a motorcycle or something, but you feel unsettled. You feel, oh, something bad is going to happen right about now. I will say Holt McCallany, he's a David Fincher guy. He's normally a supporting player. I don't know if any of you out there watched Mindhunter. He's brilliant in that. In this, oh man, he is... shit is not the right word to say, but he's somebody who is so fucking hard on these boys that it goes beyond being a shit. And watching him do the press junkets for her, he kind of, not so much that he went method with it, but he started defending Fritz von Erich in real life, saying, you know, you can't blame all the wrestling's problems on Fritz von Erich. And while Maura Tierney is just sitting there, like, rolling her eyes, being like, what have I gotten myself into? I just think it's great. It's a great movie, and one that I hope more people can see now that it's on Prime Video. Okay, why don't we shoot on over to Disney Plus? Change gears slightly for a fairly prestigious movie from last year. We're going to be talking about Poor Things.
Go home!
Bella!
Madam Swiney was right. I am discovering parts of myself hitherto unknown.
It is a way to look at it.
The variety of desires being made manifest is fascinating. Have you had the man who puts a wedge of pineapple in your mouth and covers you in dust?
Are we Jack? My little sister.
Bella! I'm almost ready to forgive you. I've booked our bus home, and I've told Mother to prepare our wedding bed. Did you fuck that guy with hooks or hand? You did, I know! I beat the tar out of that guy!
Duncan, I thought you left.
Back to the ship, it started to ache and vomit. So I'm here to save you.
Le Duncan. Quel gâchis.
Jamais.
Go home, Duncan. Our time has ended. I look at you and feel nothing but the lingering question of how did I ever want you?
Oh. And we must go to the meeting of socialists.
Your horse!
We are our own means of production. Go away.
The wonderful Mark Ruffalo and Emma Stone there from last year's Poor Things. This was a huge hit at the Oscars. Won 4, including Best Actress for Emma Stone, Best Hairstyle and Makeup, Best Production Design, and Best Costuming. It's by Greek filmmaker Yorgos Lanthimos. I don't know if you're familiar with any of his other work. Probably the one that most Irish people would know would be The Lobster, which stars Colin Farrell and was filmed in parts in Kerry. It's a great movie. He has a very offbeat sensibility, kind of, I don't want to say twisted sense of humor, but he comes from things from a different angle. Emma Stone, as you can guess, is fantastic in it. Her second Academy Award for Best Actress after La La Land. She beat out for Killers of the Flower Moon Lily Gladstone, who a lot of people, including myself, thought was going to win because her performance is just so bravura. But when I went to see this film with my dad, which at times is an uncomfortable watch because there's a lot of sex in it, and we'll get into the nature of the sex, but I remember thinking, if anybody beats Lily Gladstone, it'll be Emma Stone, because she is phenomenal in it. She plays Bella Baxter, who is the creation of Frankenstein's monster. So it's Frankenstein's monster, essentially. He's not called Frankenstein, but it's, you know, Willem Dafoe plays this character who was created by a scientist, and then he basically finds a woman who was pregnant, but her body, she jumped off a bridge, so he was able to put the brain of the unborn baby into the head of the adult. And the first 20-25 minutes of this movie are in black and white, and it shows Emma Stone acting like a toddler. And she does a phenomenal job acting, unnervingly so, because it's a weird juxtaposition of somebody who has a 4-year-old. And yeah, it was reminding me of a couple of years earlier where she would just throw her plate off the table. But it's not a toddler. It's Emma Stone, who's, you know, a very beautiful, you know, lady who's acting like a child. It was very, it kind of puts you off kilter straight away. And I remember saying it to Faye, like, oh, it's on Disney Plus, we should watch it. And she's like, no, I don't like that. It kind of unnerved her, the idea of a grown woman acting like a child. Now, the way the movie kind of goes on is every man who meets her becomes infatuated with her, and they try to, I don't know, mold her or use her in their own way, to their own means. You heard Mark Ruffalo in the clip there, who is fantastic. He was nominated for her Best Supporting Actor. He kind of swoops in and takes her away on a cruise, and they go to all these different cities, and like he teaches her like about sex, and it kind of, once that ball starts rolling, it just doesn't stop. But it's very interesting how she grows as a character, as somebody who was taken advantage of, quote unquote. But it's not quote unquote. He does take advantage of her, but then she gains autonomy and starts pushing back, and then he becomes the kind of love struck mess that, you know, can't live without her. And it's just a great kind of, trend, or a great kind of journey that she goes on, that really, in any other hands, I mean, the sentences I've just said don't make sense, but in any other hands, if you don't have that like weirdo sensibility that Yorgos has, you fall prey to it just being a kind of, oh, this is, I don't like this, this is weird. But it was a big hit, like I say, cleaned up at the Oscars, two for Emma Stone. I can't sing her praise enough, but everybody is great in it. Willem Dafoe is really, really good in it as well. It looks incredible. Like, it is shot through this like fishbowl lens, and he kind of did the same thing for the previous movie he'd done, which also starred Emma Stone and Olivia Colman, called The Favourite, where it makes everything kind of look distorted almost. And when you have the kind of set dressing that, again, they look unearthly or otherworldly, it really all just comes together quite beautifully. And then the way the film doesn't come into a crescendo, but the way it comes to a conclusion, I was very satisfied by it. And it's quirky, it's offbeat, but it's so funny. It's really, really funny. Most of the performances in it are pitch perfect. They'll make you laugh. And it's sitting right there. Just go give it a check out. All right, so I mentioned we're not going to do anything from Apple TV Plus because their movie slate is not great. So we're going to go back to the one that everybody has in Netflix. And it's a movie that I tried to oar in one of our main feed episodes a little while ago, starring my man Glenn Powell. We're talking about Hitman.
My would-be employers ran the gamut, evenly divided between men and women, young and old, rich and poor.
I like suicide. That seems clean.
Doesn't it? That's the dream. But a left-handed person doesn't shoot themselves with the right hand. A person with phobia for heights doesn't jump. A well-tied noose requires studying. Suicidal people want to leave this world quickly. They don't want to explain themselves. Neither do I.
Maybe surprise me?
Sounds lovely.
Glenn Powell there doing his best Christian Bale as Patrick Bateman impersonation in last summer's Hitman, a movie that I think is just tremendous. Glenn plays Gary Johnson. He is a philosophy professor in one of the local colleges in New Orleans, but he supplements his time and income by helping out local law enforcement as a tech guy. He's kind of a bit of a tech whiz. This is all based on a true story on a guy that essentially started doing this, and then one day he was asked to participate in a sting when the police officer was supposed to go undercover for basically getting somebody on tape hiring a hitman. And the way the movie puts it is hitmen aren't real. They don't exist in the real world anyways. But when people go to hire them, it is a crime and they get put in prison for it. So as the movie progresses, Gary becomes more and more involved in this, you know, how would you say, this game of, you know, dressing up. There's lovely little vignettes in it where he has like 10 different characters. That one there was, you know, like American Psycho, but he has one where he's kind of looks and sounds like Tilda Swinton. There's one where he's a MAGA guy. He's just having a lot of fun, and like he oozes charisma, as we all know at this stage. But the story takes a turn when he meets a woman who is looking to hire him to kill her husband, but he kind of stops her before she can say the words because he has an instant connection with her, and then they form a relationship, and it gets a bit twisty turny after that. But I absolutely love this movie. It's a breeze, about 2 hours, but it's a breezy 2 hours. It's fun, it's sexy, which is a big thing for, you know, films to have a bit of romance. We were talking about Poor Things there. It's not exactly sexy. There's a lot of sex in it, a lot of riding in it. But this, the chemistry between Glenn Powell and Adria Arjona is just fantastic. She is a star in the making, I think. She is so good in this. She really compliments him quite well. The cast is rounded out by some great character actors as well. You've got anybody who's watched The Walking Dead, one of the characters from that, he's played by a guy called Austin Emilio. He has a bit of a scar on his face. He plays the kind of, he's not a dirty cop, but he's a overzealous cop that gets mixed up in things, and he has a bit of a rivalry with Gary. It's just a really fun time, and if Twisters has shown us anything, that like, he's here to stay, pal. He's a movie star, he can open a movie. I mean, Twisters made 200 something million domestic at the box office. It's a shame that this one, I mean, Netflix gave it a limited run. It's a shame that it didn't actually get a wide release. It's great that it's here on Netflix. That's the whole point of this, you know, episode, is all these shows that are right there for you to watch at home. But I would have loved to have seen it in a theater. A few people have commented on the ending of this film and how it kind of doesn't know what it wants to be. I disagree with it. I think the ending kind of asks some difficult questions and lets the characters sit with their answers. I actually found it really quite effective. I know some reviews that I read were kind of, they felt it was a little bit wishy-washy. Not me. It also has one of the most electrifying scenes this year involving a notes app, which I just thought was, like, it's one of these things that, like, I know a lot of filmmakers are shying away from modern technology in films, but like Richard Linklater, who is the director of this film, he has done Dazed and Confused, School of Rock. He's been around for 30 years now at this stage. He's done some amazing films, but he always would have some innovation, or, you know, he'd come at things from left of center. Not odd, but like he'd come up with a new way to do things. Like he's famous for doing rotoscope movies. I don't know if you've seen A Scanner Darkly, but that is a very interesting movie where, you know, you have Keanu Reeves, you have Robert Downey Jr., Winona Ryder, and they're basically all animated over their performances. And it's fascinating, and it makes sense that he would come up with some sort of new twist on modern technology within a film, because it's just been sitting there. And I was like, yeah, why hasn't anybody used a notes app in a movie before? Anyway, at this point, I'm rambling. It's late, and I'm almost running out of gas, to be honest. I've had a great time chatting these movies with myself and you guys out there that are listening, I guess. We'll be back to normal next week. myself and Andy should be back in studio, touching wood. I don't know what we're covering. We had talked about maybe doing making our own soundtracks for a movie. We'll see what the crack is with that. And I want to say a big thank you to anybody who has signed up to the Patreon recently. As Andy tells me, our numbers are higher than ever. And of course, we are covering the films of Tony Scott. Our latest one just dropped there is one of the great movies of the 90s, Crimson Tide. You got Denzel and Gene Hackman going head to head. We've got a whole back catalogue of a bunch of other stuff. We've got What's So Great About the MCU, What's So Great About 90s Action Movies, What's So Great About Ryan Gosling, and What's So Great About Big Willy's Flops, aka Will Smith's Bad Movies, and a bunch of other types of one-off ones, a bunch of top fives, top five album openers, Perfect Day, our Dream Festival. We pitch each other movies, lots of great stuff going on over there. Come join us. It's a great group of lads and ladies that are there. So we're very happy. But if you can't afford the €5 it costs, that's it, just €5 to get access to all that back catalogue, you can do me one other solid and give me a rating and review. Now, this week I was talking about five different movies that are available to stream fairly readily depending on your subscription service. And you know what? That's exactly the number of star review I want on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you put your reviews in. Give it to me. I need it. Helps grow the podcast and keep us in the charts and keep you guys in our hearts. Yeah. And I'm going to leave it there. You don't get the big L from me because we're not behind the paywall. But thanks for listening. And I hope this turned out okay. And in the meantime, I'm going to leave you with a little song from a movie that I watched this year that is not streaming anywhere. But I found it quite delightful because, wouldn't you know it, my man Neil Hannon did all the songs. This is from Wonka, starring Timothy Chalamet. Guys, I'll see you next week.
Well, now, I can see that you're a man of integrity.
Thank you.
But ask yourself this. Have you got a sweet tooth?
I do.
A hunger that you have to feed? Have you got a sweet tooth?
I do.
Well, we've got everything you need.
Don't give me that conscience nonsense.
It's simply quid pro quo.
So, 100 of your favorites.
Sorry, I'm afraid it's no. Promised the wife I got down on chocolate. You know, I gotta get in shape for the policeman's ball, so.
But think about your sweet tooth.
I do.
I've had it since I was a boy. You're not a little sweet tooth.
It's true.
The only thing that brings you joy.
Don't look at your waistline. It's fine.
Come on.
Who needs to see their toes?
So, 700 boxes.
That's a lot of chocolates.
No. Now come on, let's give it to Excel.
Have you got a sweet tooth?
Me too.
Fellas.
Have you got the hearts for chocolate?
I do, really. Yeah.
Do you think that candy's dandy?
Oh, yeah.
Well, we've got lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots.
Why am I singing?
It's the wife complaining.
Body shaving.
It's amazing what a tailor can conceal.
Keep your wretched chocolates.
1800 boxes.
Oh, deal. Oh.